And we're live.
Hello there, and welcome to episode number 7 of WP Cafe, the monthly show where we chat about WordPress with professionals about the challenges, solutions, and ideas around WordPress development for solo and small WordPress development teams. So if that sounds like you, then please consider hitting that subscribe button below to make sure you don't miss out on any future content like this. And if you enjoy the video, please click the like button below. It just helps us to understand that these sorts of topics that we're running are quite useful. So my name is Mark Wilkinson, I'm today's host, and I'm joined by my co-host Keith Devon, and in this episode we're pleased to welcome Michelle and Ben. Welcome to the show.
Hello, great to be here.
Cool, so we've called this episode Using Tailwind with WordPress. Tailwind is something I'm hearing quite a lot about. As a complete CSS novice, I don't really use it. And it's kind of the new in thing in the world of CSS. So I'm keen to learn more about it from our expert guests. Both Michelle and Ben have lots of experience in Tailwind. So I'm sure we'll learn lots from them with new ideas and solutions. And as always, I'll be keeping an eye on the comments. So if you have got any questions about Tailwind and WordPress, then please add them to the comments below it's on the right for me. I don't know whether it'd be on the right for you. And we'll try and get through as many as we can during the course of this thing. And let us know who you are and where you're watching from as well. That'd be really cool. So before we get into the topics, it'd be great to learn a bit more about our two guests. So Michelle, could you tell us a bit more about yourself and bit about your backstory with WordPress and Tailwind?
Sure. So I'm Michelle. I'm a lead front-end developer at Atomic Smash, a WordPress agency in Bristol. I always feel like a bit of a fraud coming onto these things and onto like WordPress meetups because although we're a WordPress studio, I actually don't know all that much about WordPress. I'm very much a front-end developer, so my areas of interest and expertise are HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and I tend to mostly let somebody else handle all the kind of WordPress and back-end side of things. But yeah, it's great to be working as part of a team working with WordPress in Bristol.
Cool. Excellent. And Ben, do you want to let us know a bit about you?
Yeah, sure. So mine's Ben. I am the web development manager for marketing corporate at a company called IMI Mobile. We basically, if you've ever received a marketing text from someone like EE or, you know, trying to think of somebody else who I can actually say who we work with, the NHS is a big customer of ours. So basically we help companies to communicate over WhatsApp, SMS, RCS, or all these different channels because it's an absolute nightmare to try and keep on top of them. Basically, my background with WordPress is I built my first website back in 1999. The first time I came across WordPress was 2009 when I was working as a journalist, as a bit of a sort of a segue from being a developer. Ever since then, done a lot of front end, a lot of WordPress work, done some applications. So, yeah, kind of worked all over the place and yeah. It's a long journey, but yeah, kind of where I am now.
Cool. Lots of experience. That's good. Oh, right. So we're talking about Tailwind and WordPress today. So I guess the first question is, what is Tailwind? I mean, for those of you out there who haven't heard of it, well, hopefully you've heard of it, but if you don't quite know what it is, and this includes me, by the way, what is Tailwind? So Michelle, do you want to kind of see if you can answer that briefly? What is Tailwind if people don't know?
Sure. So Tailwind is a utility class framework. So utility classes in CSS are very small single purpose classes. So you might have a class like BG Red to apply a red background color to your element. So it's a completely different way of styling in that you'll use just lots and lots of these single purpose classes in your HTML rather than having something like in regular CSS or BEM, you might apply one class with, you know, 10 different properties to style a particular element. Unlike Bootstrap or other kind of similar CSS frameworks, it doesn't kind of dictate your markup at all. It's literally just a library of all these classes that you can sprinkle on to your HTML and apply as much or as little as you want.
Excellent. Anything to add, Ben, or is that a good summary?
Yeah, it's a really good summary. I mean, I've heard a lot of people describe it as like an API for writing CSS. I think probably a really good topic to touch on is that kind of bootstrap approach, where I think a lot of people who think that it's something that they've never done or never worked with kind of have done it a little bit, in the sense that if you think about buttons in Bootstrap, you've got the BTN class, but then you've got BTN blue or BTN green, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of just taking that to its logical conclusion of defining every aspect of a class. Okay. And you know, as Michelle was saying, it's that kind of, you define every single part of it in the markup. And for me, the real, you know, sort of like difference is that you're either writing CSS in some ways in HTML, or you're writing it in a CSS file. And it is really just where that lives and where that complexity lives. So.
Okay. So you mentioned about the markup, Michelle, and it doesn't dictate your markup. Did other things such as Bootstrap, did they dictate how you marked up your content?
So I'll admit, it's been several years since I've used Bootstrap, so okay. I don't know how much has changed since then. But certainly when I used Bootstrap, it was a case of you needed to have, you know, particular classes right. in a particular order to use sort of certain mm-hmm. components, and they certainly weren't like kind of long like lots of different small utility classes the way that Tailwind is. So it was quite different, but yeah, if anyone has more recent Bootstrap experience, I'll be happily contradicted.
So how does Tailwind differ then to other CSS frameworks like BEM, for example?
Would you like me to answer that?
Sorry, I should have said. Ben first, and then Michelle.
So as Michelle sort of said, Tailwind is an approach called utility CSS, or as Adam Levin, one of the creators, always says, utility first. Bootstrap, Foundation, Material, a lot of these are ones use what's more known as semantic. Mm-hmm. So the class actually describes what the actual function of that element is. So, you know, if you take BEM, for example, the block, the element, the modifier is typically defining it's a card, and it's a card that lives in this particular element, and it's a card that needs to be modified in this particular mm-hmm. way. If you look at, say, something like BEM, for example, and sort of where there's a lot of commonalities actually with the approach that Tailwind takes and utility takes, is that BEM's whole purpose is to try and help you avoid the issue of specificity. And yeah. I think a lot of the time when you are new to CSS, one of the biggest challenges you will always run into is specificity, because you'll see these examples that run like five or six classes long, where it's like saying, you know, header, nav, UL, LI, A, you know, you style that. And it's kind of trying to break that away and say that you should only really be applying a single level of styling to each part. And in that sense, Tailwind and BEM are very similar. The difference is effectively where the CSS is written. So as Michelle said before, you know, if you have a, let's say a link in a navigation, you might have it say that it's a text gray. So like a font color of gray of a particular shade. It might be a flex item. It might have displayed flex. It might have padding of, you know, certain top and bottom and another elsewhere. And effectively, BEM says write that in a CSS file. Mm-hmm. Tailwind says don't do that. Write that very particular single utility class in the actual HTML of what you're actually writing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where they kind of really differ. It's like I said before, it's where you write it, and to okay. some extent, the benefit kind of depends on the use case. Okay. We can come back and we can touch on that, you know, a little bit more where we're talking about Tailwind with WordPress, but there are particular use cases. So,
Keith, you mentioned BEM. What's BEM?
Oh, it's another CSS. Is it called a framework? It's more a naming convention.
It's a methodology.
That's the right word. Yeah. So it's methodology, and you'll be familiar with it, Mark. We kind of use a kind of version of it when it's something like, so you'll have a module. So it'll be like dot, then module name, and then underscore underscore is like this kind of submodule. So it'll be like card underscore underscore title.
That's and then, the one I get wrong all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course. It's hard. It is really hard to get your head around. You know, I think that's one of those things. It's like sometimes you'll hear these arguments, oh, CSS is easy, CSS is hard. And, and a lot of the things are down to naming things and how you do that. And, you know, I'm sure Michelle will back me up on this. You know, one of the real benefits of Tailwind effectively compared to something like Bootstrap or writing your own CSS with them is that you don't actually have to think about naming anything. You don't have to have that level of complexity of thinking, okay, right, this is a card, but it looks like a card, but it's not a card. Yeah. I know that the BEM rules say that you can't use classes, so I've got to write this out again. I've got to think of a different name to describe this particular thing. Right. Is this an element or is it a modifier? And it's like they always say, there's two things that are really difficult in programming. The first one is breaking cache, and the second one is naming things. And that's kind of, for me, one of the real benefits of, you know, that utility first. It's not something that's exclusive to Tailwind per se, but it's just exclusive to that approach potential.
I would
tend to generally agree with that, but I think the other thing to remember is that the two, Tailwind and BEM, are not necessarily mutually exclusive. So there are quite a lot of instances in a project where I will actually break out of Tailwind and use a BEM class. Or any other CSS class, where I need to do something that is just not really possible or practical to do with Tailwind. So when I'm styling pseudo elements or kind of complex hover states where you need to be able to hover on one thing and then put something, you know, inside the element needs to change. And that stuff isn't really practical to do with Tailwind at the moment.
Okay.
So we still use BEM, and you kind of do still need to name your components something if you're working with components.
Yeah.
There's still a certain amount of that kind of overhead, but it's definitely much less. And that I find working with Tailwind is much quicker.
An interesting point, because you mentioned you were writing BEM in when you're using Tailwind. So when you're using Tailwind, you're not just every class you add is not just a Tailwind class. You can add your own classes and style them as well, can you? It's not just Absolutely. That you have to use all the classes that are in Tailwind.
Exactly. And actually, that's quite a good thing to remember for somebody getting started with Tailwind, is that you don't have to go all in and use it for absolutely everything. If you just want to start trying it out, you absolutely can do that and mix it with your existing CSS methodology. But my approach now, I would say, would definitely be to approach it utility first. So actually, Tailwind classes first. If you're finding you can't do that, or you need to write something more complex, then that's when you add the BEM class.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing with BEM as well, if you actually read what it actually says, is you're not supposed to use utility classes, period. It's like a big no-no.
Yeah.
And I think that's ultimately one of the places where it really falls down. I think, you might kill me for this, but I'm pretty sure that's what Andy Bell's, you know, cube CSS methodology is aiming to solve, is to say that yes, there are very big benefits to using that kind of block element you know, approach, but then also tying in getting rid of modifiers and basically replacing them with utility first classes. So it is there are a lot of different things out there that you can look at using to try and get around those type of things. And you know, as Michelle said, you know, just to reinforce, I mean, like, we manage big websites, and you know, these things are like trying to turn around an oil tanker. So not necessarily the type of thing that you guys would necessarily be dealing with, but when we first started moving over to Tailwind, we couldn't rewrite the whole site in one go. It was just impossible for us to do. It would have taken months. So we started introducing Tailwind into the website. And, you know, there are certain caveats with this, but, you know, you can effectively bring in a different CSS file in parity with your existing one and start moving things over slowly and not necessarily have to worry about, you know, going all in one go.
Yeah, it sounds like Tailwind isn't like the actual ultimate solution. You're going to need your own CSS as well, but it's like a big helping hand that you've got all this stuff you can just use without writing it yourself.
Absolutely.
Which sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm writing much less CSS now that I'm using Tailwind.
Yeah. I bet this is a big help, isn't it? Yeah.
We actually go all in. And I mean, that's the thing. I would actually say that in the last major project that we launched, we wrote maybe 10 lines of CSS.
Yeah.
And I mean that's you know you don't have to go all in, but you can. That's the thing. So.
Yeah.
That brings me on to another question, actually. But before I do, I just want to have a quick look through the comments. So if you've got a question and you're watching online on YouTube, then please ask it in the comments and we'll try and get to them. Elliot Richmond, thanks. He says, I think most frameworks work on a component basis. Tailwind works on a CSS declaration basis. Adding declarations to your HTML as inline classes, and it's so readable, which I suppose is true. When you're looking at the markup, you can tell exactly what that thing's doing because of the classes you've got it on, which is a good point.
Can I just make a little point on that? I actually find, it's probably because I'm not familiar with it, but when I look at markup that's using Tailwind, it blows my mind. I'm just like, where do you even start with this? It's just, I don't find it easy to read, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because I'm not familiar. What do you guys think about that?
I think for us, I'd be really interested to find out from Michelle's perspective, working across a lot of different websites and, you know, sort of for different clients. But we manage about 9 different websites. And what I've found is onboarding developers, once they get around, you know, that kind of structure of how the classes are done, so P for padding, X for left and right, Y for up and down, and then what the, you know, sort of the multiples of 4 are, it becomes a lot quicker for them to be able to do it. And there is a massive, you know, sort of like learning curve that you have to try and get your head around exactly how those class names are structured. But we found it very easy to then move between different projects, and it's not like we have to go, oh, what are the properties of this button users or, you know, that other type of thing users. It's just very quick to jump in and quick to be able to fix something. So,
okay.
Yeah, I certainly, when I got started with Tailwind, I had the docs open in front of me for like a week while I was working on projects. But certainly after that initial hurdle, it became much, much quicker because I could look at a class and immediately see, okay, that relates to padding, or that relates to, you know, the text color or whatever. I think going back to what you were saying, Keith, I think the natural reaction when confronted with that kind of wall of classes in your HTML is to think, oh God, this looks so completely wrong. And definitely that was my reaction too. And I think pretty much anyone who uses Tailwind for the first time, because we've always been taught about this separation of concerns and that you shouldn't have your styles in your markup. And that's exactly what Tailwind seems to be doing, is you know, people compare it to using inline styles. And it certainly can feel that way sometimes. But definitely, you know, starting out as a bit of a skeptic in that regard, the more I've used it, the more I found that building websites is so much quicker. And once those kind of classes are cemented in your brain, it doesn't take much to just reach for them whenever you need them, rather than, like Ben said, having to think of a new name for what is this component, what's this particular element within the component and all of that.
Yeah, that's definitely attractive to me because I find that really difficult. And you end up creating a little, you know, class for something and it has, you know, all the properties that you need, and then there's something similar over here, so is that a modified version of that, but it's got the wrong name now, and it's just like, yeah, it just gets very messy very quickly unless you've planned it out perfectly from the start. I think the
other things that's worth talking about as well is the fact that in the default way that they kind of recommended, I disagree massively with Adam and the core team on this. They will have a config file, which is where all your configuration of the CSS lives. And they have a very pared down, just empty structure. The first thing I always do in a project is I always dump the full config in there, because it's a great way for people to be able to refer back and not have to go to the docs. They can literally just open that and they can go, right, padding, what values do I, oh, I have a 10, or I need 11, but I actually don't have 11, so I need to add that. And that makes it very easy to do that. And then tied into that in some ways as well is utility first, the approach is utility first. But I think, you know, that whole idea of them being inline classes is that thing of perhaps we actually went wrong for 20 years with this approach down the road of semantic classes. And in terms of, I think one of the big problems that you have with having as many different approaches in utility is that it only really works when there's a commonality between approaches and people being able to move projects and understand. Because if you had like pad X or pad L and pad R and pad top, bottom, and that type of thing. When you lose that very homogenous commonality between how those classes are named, you effectively end up in exactly the same situation you have with regular CSS, where you've got to go into the CSS file to actually see what that particular class means. So there are a lot of benefits to that. So.
Okay, let's move on to some of the drawbacks. And one question that I have, I don't know whether this is a drawback or not, is that if you've got all these utility classes for background red and padding 10 and all these, surely it's rather large to actually include all this stuff. So I just wondered, Michelle, if there's any, how big is it? Is it a problem to have all this stuff that potentially you might not be using a lot of it?
Yes, if you included all of Tailwind in your build, but Tailwind in fact recommends and now comes bundled with Purge CSS, which is a tool for removing unused CSS. So the idea is you will actually only ship the CSS that you're using. And once all that unused CSS in the Tailwind file is removed, you'll end up with a much, much smaller CSS bundle as a result, even smaller than if you were using them or if you were using another methodology, because you're just reusing these tiny single purpose classes all over the place rather than duplicating CSS in your search.
Does that need a build script then or something to say, like, when I'm finished, like, get rid of the stuff that's not being used?
So depending on the tool, our kind of build process just kind of does it automatically. And I think it depends on your build tool. But I think now it has become a lot smoother and it will just kind of purge automatically at build time. That is one of the drawbacks with Tailwind, is that you need a build process it is adding another dependency to your project, and it's adding that overhead that you need to manage. Certainly a couple of years ago when I was working with Tailwind, I was running into all sorts of problems with the unused CSS not being purged correctly, like either being purged too much or not being purged enough. And that, you talk about like all the great benefits of like using Tailwind to speed up building a website, but if you have to spend hours and hours debugging your build process, then it's not really helping very much. So there are definitely drawbacks. The recent releases of Tailwind, I think, have improved on that a lot. But it is something to consider.
Keith, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna ask you both, do you have any sense of how much smaller your CSS files are, like, in terms of the percentage win?
So I just ran yarn dev, which is kind of part of our build process, which just gives you the uncompressed version of our CSS file. So with all our config out, it comes out at 4 megabytes. You would never ever want that going public because it's enormous. I think even the default CDN version, which by all means use while you're playing around with it, there's no harm in doing that. You wouldn't want to put it live. I think comes in at about 3.2 megabytes. Okay. So it is a big file. Once we run it through Purge, it comes out at about 164 kilobytes. Yeah. So it really, really strips it down. And then on top of that, the other important thing to note is that if you run something like Brotli or Gzip or something like that on your server, which obviously you need to know how to do that, but that basically strips it down even more. I think when we actually looked at the file that was actually being sent across the wires, it's like 48 kilobytes or something, or even less than that in terms of what it's actually taking to deliver that before it's decoded on the actual client side. So, you are talking about being able to just remove CSS as a file size headache. But as Michelle said, there is a big learning process. You need to be able to work with Node. You need to be able to work with, say, something like Yarn or NPM. You need to understand potentially Webpack, although, there are a lot of things that nobody knows Webpack. There's like 10 people in the world who know how Webpack works. There's abstractions that are built on top of it, Mix that are far easier to use, but you kind of have to have that kind of level above it. And I think that that's kind of where the real stress, and I know that there are many developers who I really respect who just will not use Tailwind because of that. And it is completely understandable because, you know,
yeah.
To sort of like extend on what Michelle said about debugging your CSS, debugging your CSS is a hell of a lot quicker than debugging Node or dealing with, yeah. you know, sort of versions that are different across different people's computers and stuff. So, okay. yeah, that is a big, big downside. Big problem.
Interesting. Okay. Let's move this on to WordPress.
Yep.
Because probably most people are here because they're WordPress people.
Can we just jump in on there's some questions, Mark, sorry, in the comments literally. Just before we move on to the next section. I just want to
go on them.
I don't actually know what they are. I'm reading through them.
All right. Ross has got one that's based on WordPress, so I was gonna start with that one.
Go for it. I'll put it
the other ones I were more comments than questions, which is good. So keep them coming. That's really good to get the discussion going. So Ross says, I'm sure you'll cover this, which we're going to do that now, Ross. But I'm really curious about how Tailwind fits in with WordPress markup that is generated for you, such as body classes, widgets, menus, plugins, shortcode outputs, and of course, blocks. So, like, we can't put, well, we can, but not easily, put our own classes on some of those things that are automatically generated. So does that mean we can't use Tailwind, or is there some special solutions that we can use that make that easier? Let's start with Michelle.
So I'm very interested to hear how Ben is handling this as well, because I think this is where kind of Tailwind is not completely working for us necessarily. So so what you can do with Tailwind is it has this apply feature. So you can actually extract a bunch of CSS of Tailwind classes and put them in your CSS file and apply them to a single class. Like, so if you find that, you know, a typical example is a button. So a button, you might have, you know, 20 different utility classes on that, and you need to deal with hover states and focus states and all of that sort of stuff. And they're used like lots and lots throughout your site. So it's actually kind of easier to abstract that out into class. You can take utility class and you at apply and put CSS. So that is how I would handle things that come with WordPress plugins where you can't actually add utility classes to them. Mm. I think one of the things with Tailwind is that obviously it does like make your CSS output that much smaller. But on the WordPress side, we use Gutenberg, so we have all of the Gutenberg kind of out-of-the-box CSS.
Okay.
And we have Gravity Forms as well, ships a bunch of CSS, which is, you know, a pain to override because you have to be really specific with applying these classes.
Yeah.
And actually, our CSS bundle, like, half of that is just the WordPress CSS that we need, which we can't purge because, you know, at the build time, we don't know if those classes are being used in production. So we would have a much smaller CSS file if it wasn't for that. So I'm interested to hear how Ben is handling this too.
Me too.
Mine's cheating. I think the guys know what's about to come. We don't use WordPress on our new enterprise level websites. A big part of that is down to the sheer amount of CSS that's injected by plugins, and what I'll say is that's not a bad thing. It's the whole reason why WordPress as a CMS is so easy to use, is because it handles a lot of those very, very difficult things for you. However, obviously, as soon as you start getting to be, you know, a lot more technically competent, you start running into the downsides of that. I think realistically, as a community, and in particular plugin developers and theme developers, would do well to allow people to easily override or inject their own classes into things. And I think Gravity Forms is kind of an example of this, in that when it first launched, I remember you couldn't turn the CSS off that it injected, and it was an absolute nightmare. You now can, but unfortunately, it's either on or off.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of, you know, sort of certain things, the websites that we still use WordPress on, you know, the biggest offender for injecting code is the menu. So we actually have custom menu solutions that basically use custom menu blocks to basically say, if this menu is called pipe, then, you know, effectively this is a new menu break, and it's a very, very complicated bit of code, but it's just what we needed to be able to do what we did. In terms of, you know, sort of like where you have a plugin that's injecting code, yeah, as Michelle said, it's at apply. And then, you know, or, you know, you take the slightly more nuclear option, you fork it and you change the code, it's outputting yourself, which obviously is not always going to be practical from a time perspective or from an ability perspective. You know, but I mean, that's ultimately one of the downsides. You gain a lot of speed with working with WordPress because of the sheer amount of functionality that's out there. But you kind of have to, you know, sort of remember it's a double-edged sword in that, you know, there will be certain things you kind of have to do. I mean, it's the balance, one thing that was, I mean, what I would say now is that things are moving in the right direction. I think with 5.5, they've now finally added the ability to pass arguments into get template part, will make things a lot easier. Because in the CMS solutions that we use, you know, you have this concept of partials, which is effectively analogous to get template part, but you're able to pass parameters through. So we can, what we do is we'll have like a partial called button, and then we have a class parameter that we pass the classes through. And exactly the same way you could do that now with get template part, where you say get template part button, and then pass the required classes through. So you might have a primary button, or you might have a text link based button or something like that, that you want to be able to customize on a use by use case basis. And that now makes it a lot easier than what it used to be. But yeah, effectively, that's how
we were chatting about that, weren't we, Keith, before? Grant, Keith, do you wanted to come in?
No, yeah, I was, well, if I was going to ask Michelle a question, but if you wanted to follow up on what Ben's just said.
No, I was just saying we were chatting about get template part yesterday, weren't we? And how we could possibly change things slightly, the way we do things, just to pass things to specific templates that kind of, I don't know, like if it's like a button, like you said, or a card or something like that, and then doing it that. So it's something we want to look into a bit more to try and make things a bit more compartmentalized and a bit nicer.
The other solution is to go a little bit nuclear and use something like Sage or even Timber. Yeah. So we use Timber on any of the websites that are running WordPress. We use Timber, so we can make use of Twig as a Twig. If you're not aware what Twig is, it's basically like another level of abstraction on top of PHP that kind of makes it easier for you to call in different parts and sort of patches. It's something that's used across many different coding frameworks, WordPress, Symfony,
not just WordPress, is it?
Craft, CMS, that type of thing. So, but yeah, there are ways around it.
Maybe Twig and Tim is another episode. I think that could be an exciting episode.
Michelle, I think you used that in Atomic Smash. Is that right?
Are
you
going... Yeah, we use Twig. I was going to say we actually write a lot of our own custom blocks because we can use Tailwind with those rather than using sort of all of WordPress's core blocks or using sort of other block libraries. We want to sort of have control over most of those. So,
something that I thought was, you mentioned like lots of these plugins and things, Gravity Forms being one of them, like injects its own CSS, and yet it's either on or off, which is the problem, I suppose. I just wonder if there's a product there for like providing a suite of CSS to Tailwind Gravity Forms. So when you turn it off, here's the CSS that you need to add to Gravity Forms. I don't know whether that would work or not, but.
Yeah,
because obviously it's still going to use its markup, but maybe that won't work.
No, it would actually. Yeah, I think you could. I mean, Tailwind has this concept of plugins, and I actually don't think it would be too difficult to effectively. So, an example of that is there's a plugin called Tailwind UI Forms, which is part of Tailwind's sort of commercial side of things, where you can buy themes and stuff, but this particular plugin isn't actually it's part of the open source, but it's to enable that stuff. You could potentially use something like Tailwind UI Forms or potentially extend that to kind of get around that. It's definitely something that's worth looking at. So
Keith, you
yeah, I was just gonna like go back to the question of, I guess, using Tailwind with blocks. So Michelle, if you wanted to add some like custom styling to the default WordPress blocks, for example, or first off, do you use the default WordPress blocks at all, or do you strip them all out and just add your own in?
We don't strip them all out. We use some of the core blocks more of our custom blocks.
Okay. So at a really simple level then, if you were using, for example, the paragraph block and you wanted to change the font size or the color of that block, how would you do that? Would you use Tailwind? Would you use like the apply directive to handle that? Or would you just do it in vanilla CSS or what?
So the way at the moment, the way we kind of get the default WordPress Gutenberg CSS is we actually import that into our SAS files, and have that compile with our regular CSS. Mm-hmm. So we're not having, we're the same with Gravity Forms. So we don't have like three style sheets being injected into mm-hmm. our HTML. We have we just have them all in one bundle. So that way it is a bit easier to kind of override.
Yeah.
The way I would style like the paragraph and like other core blocks is we have one SAS partial specifically for like Gutenberg overrides. Uh-huh. And we would style it within that using apply as much as possible. And it tends to be, so we also do that with kind of some high level typography stuff, and that sort of takes care of a lot of the WordPress core blocks too. Mm-hmm. So we'll style like all our H1, H2, H3 headings and paragraphs in a typography SAS file, and then that's sort of it's sort of outputs fine on the Gutenberg end, but then there's usually a bit more customization.
Yeah.
And it's usually to do with like the spacing between blocks mm-hmm. and things like that. So I quite often do, you know, like nested adjacent sibling combinators. Yeah, so you're doing, you know, element plus element, and then apply, you know, padding top or margin top or whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, clunkier than just being able to apply stuff in Tailwind, but it's kind of the best way I found so far to handle that. But I would love to hear if people are handling it a better way, or whether we should just completely remove the Gutenberg CSS and style everything ourselves, which is definitely an option.
Yeah.
Is that what you did, Keith? To take the Gutenberg style? I can't remember now what we did.
Pretty much. It was pretty painful though. I don't know if I
remember you having a
I don't know if I'd do it again. But yeah, I did. I did like just like DQ the Gutenberg CSS and wrote my own for each of the blocks. But it was there was a lot. It gives you a lot. Like Gutenberg is giving you a lot out of the box. A lot to redo if you want to like take it apart and build it again. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend that.
Where we're at the moment is we're actually kind of stripping things like the columns blocks and things out because. And just like sort of writing the layouts that we want as blocks mm-hmm. because actually like the columns blocks, although it seems super useful from a client perspective, most of the time it will be used wrongly. They'll put like the wrong kind of blocks inside it, and it's just, you know, carnage. So I'm definitely kind of leaning a bit more towards stripping out Gutenberg, but yeah, as you say, it could be pretty painful.
Columns are one for me. Columns, I think, was the main reason I wanted to rewrite everything, because I wanted everything to line up to my grid. And I was like, various ways, but yeah, it's hard.
And there's other things in Gutenberg. Yeah, like it just is sort of giving the client too much control sometimes. Like, you know, we could apply Tailwind classes in Gutenberg. You've got like add HTML classes drop down and stick a bunch of Tailwind classes on that. And I'm not advocating that at all. Like, I think that's just going to be a maintainability nightmare. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that you could do it. Like, that is how you could apply Tailwind directly to Gutenberg. But yeah, probably don't.
Yeah.
I remember quite a few Keith rants on the columns blocks.
I tried so many different ways to solve that, but just kind of gave up in the end.
Interesting. We've got a few more questions, so I thought we'd move on to a few more questions. So we had a couple in before the event, actually. So Hannah Smith asked, is using a lot of utility classes in your markup a good idea? More specifically, how maintainable is it in the long term? Ben?
Very. So obviously it's a little bit different for us in that we have a very, very defined change management system in place where we are, because obviously we're dealing with multi-million pound contracts and one bug on the website. Although we don't work on the product teams, you know, if it, they see something wrong, it kind of throws a judgment that, it could cast the wrong impression of like what the quality of our products are. So we go through a very long and, as my managers and colleagues would say, arduous change management process. And part of that is that we have to basically check every single thing. So functionality, CSS, you know, make sure that there hasn't been anything, what is called visual regression, which is basically where something that was working is now no longer working. Yep. And specifically when it comes to Tailwind, that has completely removed any concern that changing the properties of one class is going to break something else. On one of our BEM-based WordPress websites, you know, we were scratching our heads because one of the guys on my team changed some CSS for the banner, and it completely broke another part of the website which shouldn't have been touched. But because obviously the classes are so tightly interlinked, what actually ended up happening was that there was a high level of specificity on one particular component that ended up, that component disappeared out of it, and then all of a sudden that class was no longer being applied and it broke. Whereas because it's a one-to-one relationship with how the classes are actually being applied and styled, if you change, you know, a button on one part from PY6, which would add 32 pixels of padding top and bottom, to PY4, so 16, you know that's only being applied to that, and it's not going to suddenly make everywhere else that was PY32 or PY6 or whatever it is completely different elsewhere. So, you know, from a maintainability perspective, it's so much better. Then again, of course, you know, with us having to use apply so much in WordPress, it kind of adds an additional, you know, sort of caveat within that. But
had instances where we've changed stuff in CSS or took classes off things and then something random's broken down there at the bottom. You think, what the hell's going on?
Or worse, as it's happened, you know, this was like, it went through the CAD process, it got tested by our QA team who didn't spot it because it was in some completely abstract part of the website that shouldn't have been affected. And that's like, you know, ultimately one of the big benefits of taking that approach. And also on top of maintainability, if you're switching between different websites, and I'm sure, you know, Michelle will back me up on this because I remember this is what it was like working at an agency, was, you know, you change like the way that you do different things for different websites. And so a website that you built 3 years ago would be built in a completely different way to how you did it now, even though you're using the same kind of methodology. And it would just make it an absolute nightmare for you to move between projects and start changing things. It'd take you like an hour to get back into the mindset of how was that built. So, you know, we've been using Tailwind since I think about 4 weeks after it came out, because I'd come off a BEM project that was an absolute disaster and I did not want to use it again. And we haven't changed the way that we write CSS in 3 years now. So, you know, we can go back to those initial websites and we know exactly what we're doing. So, you know, from that perspective, it's very maintainable. Of course, Node is a completely different aspect.
I would 100% agree with that. It's definitely more maintainable for us. So, you know, we've worked on projects where, you know, we're afraid to delete any CSS because, you know, you don't know what's affecting what else. So, so we had a project last year that had, you know, nearly a megabyte of CSS because people were just adding to it and adding to it. No one was deleting anything. Whereas with Tailwind, you can absolutely delete classes, no problem, because you know exactly what they're doing and what they're affecting. And the other thing, like Ben says, is consistency. Everyone is working to exactly the same CSS methodology, and it's documented as well because you've got the Tailwind documentation. Whereas, you know, if you've got a mixed ability team with lots of different people having to write CSS, and not everyone is going to write that in exactly the same way, you know, no matter how hard you try to educate people and create that consistency, there's always going to be people that write it differently. Whereas, using Tailwind, you know, there's only so much difference they can write, and that's only when you're kind of extracting things out into regular CSS.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, we customize Tailwind. So, you know, how we write text sizes is probably completely different to how Michelle writes them in that, but we still stick with the, what's the term? It's called consistency over configuration, or it'll come back to me in a second anyway. But what we do instead of having that text 2XL, 3XL, is we actually replace it with the size scale. So we actually have like text 10 for 40 pixel text and stuff. But, you know, you're still staying very, very close. So, you know, even if somebody comes into the project, they know what that type scale is, so they'll be able to switch over. So even though there's actually the ability to twist it and customize it, it's still very, very close. So,
yeah, you're not having to relearn something entirely from scratch. You've got a framework to work from. It makes sense.
And the other thing is, if Michelle was to hack, sorry.
I was going to say, let's move on to, I'm just conscious of time. We've only got sort of 89 minutes left.
Yeah.
And there's a few other questions. So Hannah also asked, how much smaller is your CSS by using support? I think we've already answered that, which is good. Obviously with the getting rid of the stuff you don't need, which is good.
Yeah.
Looking at the questions, Nick mentioned that CodeKit, which a lot of people I know use on the Mac, Tailwind in the next version is going to ship with that, and it'll have the purge support. So that looks good for anyone using CodeKit. They can get cracking with the with Tailwind, which is good. Michael asks, do you find front-end development times are quicker or slower or the same with Tailwind compared to other CSS methods? I think we've probably covered that as well in a lot of we've been discussing about in terms of...
I would say one thing that's really important is to spend a lot of time upfront on the configuration. So I typically spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours at the start of a project on the configuration, making sure all your type sizes are in there, all your colors, fonts, font weights, everything you need, and not skipping over that part. But once you've done that, everything else is quicker in my experience.
Yeah, cool. And one question I've just thought of, if you put in, this might be a ridiculous question, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. If you put in lots and lots of classes on an element, is there like a limit that you can add to number of classes to a HTML element? Or not?
If it is, I haven't reached it.
I can just imagine you can like probably get to like 20 classes, and I wonder if there's a limit to how, and does that slow things down? Or does
you can be penalized for DOM size by Google. So that could be an issue. I mean, I've had that come up recently when we were doing some performance testing, but it wasn't related to Tailwind. It was related to our SVG sprite size and the amount of nested elements in a certain component. So it was actually nothing to do with Tailwind at all. So I would think you would have to go pretty big with classes if you were to.
I was just going to say, you will typically run into that issue with SVGs long before you run into it with Tailwind.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Cool. Perhaps not a ridiculous question, but still.
No such thing as a stupid question.
That's good. Any more? And just looking down the chat, I think we've answered most of those. Oh, Elliot asked, is using Tailwind in a plugin or a block very wise? If you never know where it's going to be installed, you could be adding unnecessary bloat. If, say, for instance, a theme is already using Tailwind, I guess that like you using it twice, I guess. So I guess that's a good point. And I guess that depends what you're building, whether it's going to be used by anybody or whether it's going to be in your own projects and things like that. But it's a good point to think, is it something that you should be putting that opinion on everybody else using that product possibly? So I'm not so sure if anyone else has got any comments on that. But it's, could be a problem.
It's probably Tailwind's probably the type of thing that I, as much as I would love every single theme in the world to use it and every plugin to use that methodology, I think we're a long way off that kind of thing, if it'll ever happen. And I don't think it's healthy for people to be using a single methodology. You know, the whole Tailwind was born out of a problem that came because of people using, you know, running into different methodologies and different solutions and stuff. So, you know, you'd run into a situation where you could potentially cause a stale, you know, it's become stale. So it's not a good thing. But I think, Tailwind tends to lend itself more to custom projects, I say, than, off the shelf type things.
Sounds like it to me. Sounds like it to me. And then I think one final question from, I think it's also from Nick as well. Nick Wilmark, thanks for that. Is it viable or sensible to try and use Tailwind with opinionated theme frameworks such as Genesis? I guess there's more than Genesis, but and I'm not sure like if why they're opinionated. I don't know if anyone knows why they're opinionated. Do they have their own specific way of outputting code that you can't inject with? I'm not sure.
It's been a long time since I've used Genesis. But Genesis is very opinionated in the way that you structure your PHP. The way that you use hooks and that type of thing. I think you could. I think the other problem with Genesis as well is that they have a walker for the nav class, which completely rewrites nav class, and it's another level of abstraction on top of that particular thing. I don't think you could use... I mean, this is the other thing that's probably worth noting, is you don't actually have to use Tailwind and the config, but you can use utility classes and, you know, follow the same naming structure and write that CSS in your own CSS files for, you know, particular solutions. It's a bit more, you know, sort of like lengthy to do, but there's no reason that you can't use a PX for classing your own CSS, you know. So it's just one of those things that maybe be an approach for that.
Yeah. Michelle, do you use any theme frameworks or anything in your work? I know you're the front end, but or do you build everything from scratch? I just wondered.
Yeah, we build everything from scratch. Right. So yeah, I don't have a lot of experience in that at all.
No, that's fine. That's good. And I guess like we've got a couple of minutes. The last one is how best to handle block editor CSS. So obviously there's a concept that you can enqueue CSS in the block editor to make that look like the front end. Is that, does that pose any problems, or I don't know how you do that with Tailwind. Is it just like you'd enqueue that particular style? I'm not sure. Is that have you tried that, Michelle? Or
so that's still kind of a work in progress for us. What we did on the last project we worked on is have a separate editor SAS file where we just basically kind of put like a bunch of like font styles and like colors and things like that using the app apply and Tailwind just so that we would kind of have like a bit of like the theming and the sort of website styles in the block editor. It's still a work in progress for us, and we'd like to kind of figure out a way to do that better.
I mean, I think what I'd question as well is whether there's actually any real value to necessarily trying to rewrite that. I mean, there's definitely obviously value to making it look more like what the output would be. But a big reason for using Tailwind, especially on the front end without app apply, is because of the maintainability and the speed benefits that you get from it. But if it's one person accessing it from the, you know, sort of the WP admin server, and they're not, it's, you're not necessarily worrying about re-downloading style sheets and that type of thing, the cost benefit possibly isn't there to completely try and rewrite that. So I think the approach that Michelle is using is what we would use if we were going down that approach of just, you know, writing out SAS or using at apply throughout.
What did you do, Keith? Did we just include the front end style sheet, or did you do a separate one? I don't remember now.
What, whenever we like
when we styled like the block editor? I can't remember. Like, because obviously, how do you maintain style sheet or two?
Yeah,
or is it all done with Gulp and stuff?
It's done with using Gulp.
Right.
I created two different style sheets: one for the front end editor and one for the back.
Not particularly front end, back end.
It wasn't Tailwind related, but yeah, it was quite complicated as well. So I don't know. It's tricky. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, quickly. I'm just gonna say we've pretty much hit time, but we've got a minute or two. We did start a bit late, so go for it.
I guess first to Michelle, now that you've started using it, like, do you ever see a future where you don't, not necessarily Tailwind, but you don't use utility first anymore? Or do you think this is just like we've stumbled on the best way to use CSS now, and this is it?
I don't really see it like that. So in my own personal projects, I don't use Tailwind.
Okay.
Tailwind has like big benefits for me as a team using it. I would absolutely advocate that.
Yeah.
In my personal projects, I mean, I actually quite like writing regular CSS. And a lot of the stuff that I do in CSS, like working with like intricate grids and working with custom properties, is not that straightforward to do in Tailwind.
Okay.
And not to mention, you know, there's lots and lots of new CSS features coming out all of the time. There's like logical properties, for instance, which are pretty new. I don't know if they're in Tailwind at all at the moment.
Yeah.
And you know, lots of other things that are coming out. So I don't think that we should necessarily be, you know, tied into Tailwind for that and reliant on Tailwind having to you know, keep up to date with all those changes. CSS is pretty cool on its own. And with custom properties, you can actually, you know, write CSS that's much, much more efficient. But yeah, having said that, I absolutely advocate the benefits of using it as a team.
Okay.
And I can't see us going back for a long time. Tailwind has a bit of a kind of cult following as well. There's lots of people like really pushing for it, you know, saying, you know, basically this is how CSS should just be. Like,
yeah.
almost wanting to get rid of normal CSS and make Tailwind just the kind of standard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really agree with that.
Right, cool. Good. Ben, any thoughts on that for you? Like, do you see yourself using normal CSS in the future, or would you love to be fully Tailwind 100% of the time?
I mean, well, I'd say I am fully Tailwind all the time, but that's not to say that there wouldn't be anything else that would come out that would potentially solve some of the issues that Tailwind has, for example. You know, I think it kind of fits in with that saying that Winston Churchill said, that democracy is the worst form of, you know, government that we tried except for all the others. And in some ways, Tailwind is the worst form of CSS apart from all the others that we've tried. But they all have their use cases. They all have, you know, different benefits and drawbacks. And I think what Michelle said is absolutely spot on. And what I'd extend is that there is a real, real danger, I think, of there being a group of people who have only ever used Tailwind who can't write CSS. And there are dangers to taking away that ability, where you run into things like, you know, the benefits that logical operators bring into being. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think we've got to be very, very careful that we don't go too far down one way. I completely understand where people are coming from about, you know, sort of use Tailwind, because while it is a bit of a cult, you know, it is diametrically opposed to sort of the semantic way of doing things. And you, I think what they want is that kind of utility first approach to be adopted with everything. And I think a lot of the issues that we talked about with themes and plugins would be completely gotten away with if we did use that kind of methodology, but that's not necessarily a good thing, you know. So it's just one of those things. I think, you know, everyone should understand how CSS works. They should definitely write CSS. I think you forget the benefits of, you know, things like utility first if you don't write CSS. I think that's kind of where I am on it. So.
And there are other approaches that kind of solve similar problems. So a lot of people are using CSS in JS now, and CSS modules, which very closely scopes your CSS to a component. So that does solve some of the problems that you get with, you know, making sure your styles aren't affecting.
Don't encourage them. I think the danger with things like CSS and JS, and Tailwind is in some way a form of CSS in JS, because it requires JavaScript to be able to do it. You go down that route of reinventing the wheel for the sake of, you know, not wanting to learn how to use something properly. Scope CSS, absolutely 100%. There are definite benefits to that. But yeah, I think, but again, that's the type of thing, you know, there are learnings that come out of that community. There are learnings that come out of every community. And it's the same with CMSs. I think, you know, it's always healthy to try different things, because that's where you learn about it. This came out of the Laravel community, and I think it's only because of people working across multiple different things that it really came into the WordPress community. So, you know, don't ever lock yourself into one thing.
Yeah, I think
kind of my mentality on that.
You've both convinced me to give it a go, for sure. Like, even if it's just to learn, like, just a different way to think about CSS, and like, you know, and even if I don't end up using it going forward, I think just playing around with Tailwind, I would just learn a lot about how to structure my own CSS, even if I don't use it. So, yeah, so it sounds very cool, but we're definitely going to give it a go, Mark, I'm afraid to say.
Elliot, I'll leave that to you. Elliot mentions, he says, it's a good point, learn the core syntax before using the helper tools. And the same goes with any coding language. And I think I would second that. But what I would say is that I kind of didn't do that. And I don't think most people do. They kind of learn, like I learned WordPress before I really understood PHP. I don't think I really understand PHP now, but anyway, you get the idea. But so it kind of works, but not in practice. But I do say that's true. I think learning something from the ground up is obviously going to be the best way to do that.
So I think about CSS forever, but I think a problem that a lot of people in the CSS community have with it is it's kind of pushed as this great thing for CSS, but you're like, it's sort of a way to avoid having people learn about CSS. And I think a lot of people feel it's kind of devaluing the craft of CSS as well. Like a lot of people like myself specialize in CSS, and we, you know, spend the time learning all this stuff, learning about all the new specs that are coming out. But Tailwind, on the other hand, makes it super easy for people not that familiar with CSS to write CSS. But at the same time, we're also saying, oh, actually, you don't need to learn CSS. And I think that's a problem, because we do need people who know CSS really well.
I think you do need to know CSS. And that's the other thing, is you can't really come in, like, it's not like Bootstrap. You can't come in with no knowledge and just pick up different components. But it's that kind of gradated level. You know, you've got Bootstrap where you don't know anything about CSS. You've got, you know, a couple of different ones that go down below that. I think Tailwind is very close to the metal, but there is that sort of next level down where I describe it as like source diving. There's people who can read the WordPress documentation and know exactly how to fix a problem, and then there are people who can go into the WordPress code and see exactly what's going on. It's that kind of difference, and there's always going to be a massive benefit for people who do go into the code and who really understand the nuts and bolts of how things work. You know, I think I always see that as an opportunity. It's an opportunity to differentiate yourself from, you know, the vast majority of people. So I 100% agree.
Yeah, CSS is massive. If it gets more people into writing CSS, then maybe it's a good thing.
CSS.
You know,
I think that's the crucial thing.
More people interested in it and to learn about it and how it works, then.
Yeah, I think that's the crucial thing, is good CSS. You can write bad CSS very, very easily.
We're pretty much out of time. So just before we finish, just if we've got people watching, and thanks, by the way, if you've been watching along, if we've got people watching that are thinking, actually, this sounds really good and I would love to go and learn some more about it, Michelle, where do you think they would or should go and find out the information first? What's the best resources around there that you could go to?
So I would say just the Tailwind documentation is just fantastic. It explains what every single property does, or every single class does, and it explains different ways you can get started with it as well. And it's pretty much, you know, the only source I refer to when working with Tailwind.
Good. And is there anything like WordPress specific that you think that might be helpful to them?
I don't know of anything. If you can get Tailwind set up on a project, you can pretty much use it with WordPress. But I would love to see more resources around using it with sort of Gutenberg and the things that we've talked about.
Get writing when you learn it.
Get learning first, yeah.
Cool. Anything to add, Ben? Or?
I think a lot of us, when we started learning, we learned by reading the source, you know, and using an inspect editor. And what I recommend strongly is there's a website called Built with Tailwind. And I honestly think that if you are wanting to get into understanding how it's actually used in real situations, go to builtwithtailwind.com. Find a website that you like or that you want to understand how it's built, and just read the code, read the source and understand how, you know, and more than that, go into the inspect element, turn classes off, understand how it's interacting and stuff and play around with it that way. It's a really good way of actually getting to grips with exactly how it all works and how it all ties in with each other on the actual front end.
Cool. Good. So just before we finish then, Michelle, Ben, where can people find you on the web if they want to follow and find out more about you, your services, what you do? Michelle?
So I am on Twitter like all the time. So I'm at Mishbarks or at CSS in real life if you just want the CSS stuff. And also on my website, CSS in real life too.
Excellent. And Ben?
So on Twitter, I'm FrontEndBen. I am also on Twitter way too much, but it's cathartic. It's a good way of taking a break. And I also have quite a few Tailwind guides on my my website, benburphy.co.uk. They're not always necessarily about WordPress, but you'd probably be able to take some parts away from that. So.
Cool, great, thank you. And thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate that. I hope the our audience got something good out of that. I'm sure they did. I've learned a lot about Tailwind CSS. Sounds like Keith has as well, because it looks like we're going to have a go with it, which is good. Again, please do subscribe to the YouTube channel if you want to watch more episodes of this. We've got more things coming up. And that takes me on to January's episode, which is kind of going to be a second parter. So our very first episode, I can't remember now, I think it was. Was about developing themes with Gutenberg and the block editor. And we've got Bill Erickson coming on in January, just after Christmas, to talk kind of a follow-up to that and see some further thoughts and things. So thanks again to our guests, Michelle and Ben. Thanks to all those who turned up. I tried to get as many questions as I could in. I'm sorry if I didn't get to yours. But yeah, that's all for now. And we will see you after Christmas. A Merry Christmas, and we'll see you in January.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.